all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Jim Fossone.
Good afternoon. I am Jim Fossone, today's host, and flying with me in studio is Dale Thronberry.
Good morning. Good afternoon, Jim, and it's good to be here.
We've got a great program lined up for our listeners. The first segment will be on the Michigan Veterans Affairs Agency. We have its Director of Outreach lined up to talk to us about what's new and what sort of services are available from the state of Michigan. And in our second segment, we'll talk about veterans treatment courts. Those are courts specifically for veterans, and they're really all around the country. But we're going to be talking to a local judge who runs a veterans treatment court here in Michigan.
That's a pretty cool thing going there, because I know you're, as a lawyer yourself, some of these guys, that men, women, that get out of the service, get themselves into trouble, not serious trouble, but the regular court system really doesn't quite understand exactly what's going on. I'm anxious to hear about that story.
I think we're all going to learn a lot. Certainly, if you have any questions or comments throughout the show, feel free to call in at WHAM 1600 Radio. The number is 734-822-1600, or if you're listening on the Internet and you want to use the 800 number, it's 844-838-1600. That's 844-VET-1600. We'd also remind everybody to go to Facebook and like us on Facebook. That allows you to follow along and see what next week's programs are, get a kind of a jump start on that. We usually get that posted on a Wednesday, Thursday, maybe Friday.
Depending on when everything is finalized.
But it'll give you a chance to see what's coming up in the next program and certainly listen in, if not on the AM station here at WHAM 1600, listen in on the Internet. And I know I speak to many folks who say they listen in on their smartphones on the radio app. So
yeah, they can.
That's a nice way to do it. So we have...
I wanted to just point out that if you have missed a Veterans Radio program in the past and you'd like to hear it, you can go to our website, veteransradio.net, and the last probably 2 months of programs are right there on the main page, on the home page, and you can just scroll down and figure out which those. If you want to listen to some of the older programs, you can click on our archives tab up at the top, and it'll take you back. I think we've got about 3 years' worth of programs already loaded up onto the website, and we've got another two that we're working on this week.
Well, that's great. It's a great way for folks to catch back up on some programs, and some of the stuff is quite historical, sort of like last week's program acknowledging the 45th anniversary of landing on the moon. And
nice.
I think our partner, Bob Gould, did a great job on that one last week. So if you missed it, you should go here, listen to his interview with Jay Barbary about Neil Armstrong and landing on the moon.
Yeah, it was really cool to listen to Bob's interview, and then later that night I was watching something on the History Channel, and there was Jay Barbary. And you say, hey, this is really kind of cool. So these are the kind of guests that we're going to be having on Veterans Radio and today and in the future. So we encourage you all to listen in and tune in every Sunday evening from 5 to 6 Eastern.
So this is the point where we talk about a couple of upcoming events, and certainly veterans and veteran associations, if you have events you want us to promote, this is a good way to get it done. So email us. Dale gets those emails, and we'll put them on the show. We want to remind folks that August 9th and 10th, Thunder Over Michigan will be happening out at Willow Run Airport. Kids get in, under age 15, get in for free. You can get your tickets at yankeeairmuseum.org, yankeeairmuseum.org, and I'll give you a phone number to call for those tickets for Thunder Over Michigan at 734-483-4030.
That's right. And if you like airplanes and helicopters and stunt pilots and formation flying.
And who doesn't?
And World War II reenactors, Vietnam War reenactors, there's helicopters, you can take rides, you can, these stunt pilots are amazing, the Thunderbirds are going to be there, you got these jets going 800 miles an hour, about two inches apart, and I think you'll be amazed to see them. So, yeah, head on out to Willow Run on August 9th and 10th. You won't regret going out there. It's a great show.
Wanted to bring two more events out to folks' attention. One is a fundraiser for Camp Liberty. They were guests on our show a couple of weeks back. On August 24th, they're having a fundraiser at the firing line in Westland, Michigan. So if you want to go out and do some shooting and be with other veterans and just have an overall good time, 5:30 p.m. on August 24th at Firing Line for Camp Liberty, you can call Rick Briggs at 810-908-1901 for tickets. He'd be glad to set you up and bring out your buddies and have a good time.
And what was Camp Liberty?
Camp Liberty is a recreational therapy location, 100-plus acres out in Manchester, Michigan, where veterans can go out and do therapeutic fishing and hunting and hiking and just get out back into the woods and de-stress and with their friends and family and really try to center themselves. So it's a real cool idea.
It is a great idea, and we want to congratulate Rick on being involved with that.
And then a month away or so, mark your calendars for September 10th in Livonia, the Canton Community Foundation Veterans Summit. I think it's the fifth annual summit's coming up. They pull in about 300 veterans and friends every year to learn about VA benefits and healthcare issues and disability issues. You can go to cantonfoundation.org, cantonfoundation.org, and sign up for that free event. But they do ask you to register.
When was that? September?
Yeah, September 10th.
September 10th. Okay.
And then a little teaser for next week program. We have a program that's going to focus on medics in Afghanistan and sort of modern military medicine. Our guests for that program are going to come from the military and veteran social media community known as Rally Point. So we're really looking forward to having them involved and hearing from some of their members who were medics in Afghanistan. And actually, why don't you tease your portion as well?
Well, we're going to be also talking with an organization called Got Your Six. In the military, when these people say that you've got your six, that means that somebody's got your back. And this is an organization that has been fairly around for quite a while, and they're going to be on talking about what they're doing to help veterans and a lot of different veterans' causes. They collect monies and donations and so forth, and then they distribute it to other veterans' organizations. So I think you'll like it. Probably seen the commercials on television. They've got Tom Hanks and Sinise and a bunch of other people, and I think you'll really find it interesting. So I'm anxious to talk with them.
So those are your teasers for next week. Right after this, we'll come back and talk to the Director of Outreach for the Michigan Veterans Affairs, Nick Cook.
At age 34, Peter Herrick joined the Navy Reserve and was deployed to Iraq.
When the mortar round hit, I was completely knocked out.
When he returned home, Paralyzed Veterans of America was there to help. Paralyzed Veterans of America service officer Raymond Bruce.
We advocate, we educate, and we process claims through the VA, and we follow that claim from the beginning to the end.
You can help. Visit PVA.org, a public service of Paralyzed Veterans of America.
And we are back on Veterans Radio on WAM 1600. I should mention that Veterans Radio supporters for today's program, it's sponsored by Legal Help for Veterans, your one stop for legal assistance, Canton Community Foundation, Schoolcraft College, Applebee's Restaurant, and Len Pitlack, CPA serving our community. We have with us in our first segment now Nick Cook, who is the Director of Targeted Outreach for the Michigan Veterans Affairs Agency. Nick, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hey, thanks, Jim, for having me on today.
Well, it's great for you to take a little break on this nice sunny Sunday and spend it with our listeners here on Veterans Radio. Let's start with this. Nick, tell us a little bit about your background, where you grew up, where you went to school, those sorts of things.
Well, Jim, I was born and raised in Lansing, graduated high school from Grand Ledge High School, and then was accepted to United States Military Academy, was commissioned as an armor officer in 2001 from West Point, went to Fort Knox for officer basic training, then off to Germany with with a stop in Samarra, Iraq. Then back to Fort Knox for the captain's course, and then on to Fort Riley, where I commanded Alpha Troop 1st Squadron, 4th United States Cavalry, and we were part of the surge into Baghdad. Redeployed, was selected to be the aide de camp to the commanding general of 1st Infantry Division. Then I was selected to go to the Army Congressional Liaison Program, where I got my master's in legislative affairs from George Washington University. From that point, did my time at Army Congressional Liaison, decided it was time for my family and I to leave the service after 12 and a half years. And an opportunity that was presented to me was to come back to the state of Michigan and actually assist other veterans. For 83 years, you know, the veterans have been really forgotten in the state of Michigan.
Well, I think, Nick, first let's start with thank you for your service. I must ask, though, what was harder, being commanding the troops in Iraq or whipping those folks up on in Congress on the Hill?
It's just a different type of combat.
Well, for a West Pointer who has a civil engineering degree, did you ever think you'd find yourself working in Veterans Affairs?
No. Honestly, I always thought I was going to be career military and really thought I was going to go into manufacturing as an engineer, project manager. But as I started transitioning, I realized there was a lot of issues with veterans in the state of Michigan. Just in the employment world, we're not even talking about the benefit side. It was just really hard to understand why veterans had been forgotten in the state.
So let's talk a little bit about how this opportunity came about. There's been a lot of restructuring in the state of Michigan and in Michigan Veterans Affairs Agency, sort of a new creature. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. When Governor Snyder took office, he went to Afghanistan around December of 2012, November 2012, and kept being told by all the Michigan troops, as you know, many of the Michigan National Guard troops have deployed to Afghanistan and Iraq. They kept saying, we're not coming back to Michigan. We can't come back. We don't want to come back to Michigan. There's nothing there for us. And Governor Snyder asked his team to take a look at this. And one of the things they identified was that there was no leadership at the state level. 14 separate state agencies touch veterans' issues in the state of Michigan. But they never talked to each other. So there was a lack of leadership at the strategic level in the state. And with Executive Order 2013-2, Governor Snyder created the Michigan Veterans Affairs Agency, which was a separate agency under the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. As you know, the old model, we did have a Veteran Affairs Division under our directorate under Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, but there's about six people on staff, two political appointees, two working the trust fund, a secretary, and one person to oversee the homes. So there wasn't a lot of focus on other things besides the Michigan Veterans Trust Fund and the Michigan Veterans Homes in both Grand Rapids and Marquette.
And with the new focus for the agency, tell us a little bit about the resources that have been brought to bear and sort of in this first year or so where you're trying to strengthen the state's ability to assist veterans.
Right. What we're really trying to do at the agency is to focus on the areas of education, employment, health care, and quality of life. Quality of life being the catch-all areas such as homelessness, DNR specialty hunts, things of that nature that don't immediately fall in the other categories. But we were trying to get the word out to the veterans and have a continuous dialogue. Also advocate on behalf of the veteran to universities in the state, employers in the state. As you know, there isn't an active duty base in Michigan, so people really don't understand what a veteran is. And some veterans don't even know who they are. They don't identify as a veteran because they never served in combat or they only served for 4 years during peacetime. So,
let me interrupt you if I can there, Nick, because I run into this all the time and I'm sort of shocked by it, that people who have served in the military, even if you haven't gone overseas, even if you haven't fought in Vietnam or been in Iraq or been in Afghanistan, you're still a veteran and entitled to benefits and assistance from the state. Isn't that correct?
You're absolutely correct, Jim. It is kind of funny. We were talking to a former CEO of one of the Tier 1 auto parts suppliers in the state of Michigan the other day, and he served in the Navy in the mid-70s, and he never considered himself a veteran. He was active duty Navy, surface warfare officer, but because he didn't go to Vietnam like so many of his peers, he felt he wasn't a veteran.
I think you have seen this too, Dale, where it's sort of, I don't feel worthy because that guy's services was so much more, or he gave a limb and I didn't.
Well, that's always a problem, but it's a matter of perception, because whoever joined, whenever you joined, you didn't know what conflict may come up or may not come up, and you agreed to do whatever they, you know, and go wherever they would send you. And if they sent you to Seattle instead of to Baghdad, well, that's just the way it was. But you provided the opportunity for them to utilize your capabilities in your service. So we have to remind people that you are a veteran and you should be proud of what you did, and whatever it was, because they needed you wherever you were.
And what we're trying to do is to ask the beginning question of, did you ever serve in the U.S. military, or did you ever serve in the U.S. Armed Forces? That way people, it's a different conversation. You're not
right.
Trying to ask where they've served or anything. You just want to know, were you ever part of one of those organizations?
And Nick, how many veterans are there in the state of Michigan now?
Right now we're looking at about 660,000. The 11th largest veteran population in the country. So Michigan has a very proud military heritage.
And are you finding that folks who are current active duty are finding the agency as a place it can reach out to talk about, hey, do I come back to the state of Michigan? Are there education and employment opportunities? Is that part of what the reach is as well?
Right. We've partnered with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. We're one of two states that the U.S. Chamber of Commerce identified to host and promote job fairs through. We are also, the Army has a Soldier for Life program, and prior to the agency being set up, they didn't even know who to talk to in the state to get the Soldier for Life program up and running in the state of Michigan. So these are assets that are available at the national level to help funnel talent to the state of Michigan. Also, we are communicating with the universities. For the first time, the public universities are offering in-state tuition to veterans. That is a change.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there is a lot of good things that are happening in the state because of just the conversation that we're having at the strategic level.
And changing from a directorate to an agency, has that allowed the agency to get some more resources in terms of manpower and budget, I suppose?
You're exactly right, Jim. Prior to the creation of the agency, we were just another line item under the Department of Military Veterans Affairs. It was up to the Adjutant General to decide how much money we got or where it went as part of his overall budget. And he was prepared, the Adjutant General is preparing his troops for combat. So veterans kind of were on the back burner. Now we are in the governor's budget. We are at cabinet level. Agency, so we sit at the table with the governor, so that brings in the monetary resources. It also brings in at the central coordinating point amongst all state agencies. It really focuses more on the veteran now than it ever has.
And I know one of your missions is to connect veterans to their benefits. Maybe you can talk about some of the ways in which the agency is now doing that.
Yes. One of my programs in the Targeted Outreach Division is the Michigan Veterans Coalition that oversees the approximately 56 service officers across the state of Michigan. When I came into this office, 12% of Michigan veterans received some type of disability and compensation payment. The national average was 16%. That left $1.37 billion on the table that should have been going directly to Michigan veterans. So what we did was we re-looked the state as a whole and also it keeping in mind that the governor has put out service delivery regions across the state. And we worked with the coalition to realign all of our service officers so that every place in the state of Michigan was having predictable and quality service regardless of where you lived.
So let's talk a little bit about what the Michigan Veterans Coalition is. How does that get made up? What groups or organizations make that up?
The Michigan Veterans Coalition is comprised of the Military Order of the Purple Heart, Disabled American Veterans, Veterans of Foreign Wars, VFW, American Legion, and the Marine Corps League. Next year, we just signed a two-year grant agreement and encouraged the Michigan Veterans Coalition to expand. And next year, on a provisional basis, they will bring in the Paralyzed Veterans of America, Michigan chapter, and the Vietnam Veterans of America, the Michigan chapter. So we'll have seven partners providing service across the state.
And it's those partners then, Nick, who supply the 56 veteran service officers you mentioned a moment ago?
Yes, there's 56 accredited service officers amongst those organizations spread throughout the state. I have five service officers that work for me at the state. I have one in Lansing, two in Detroit, one in Grand Rapids, and one in Marquette. The one in Marquette and the one in Grand Rapids are both at the veterans' homes in those cities. We also have partnerships with the Michigan Association of County Veterans Counselors, and there's approximately 110 counselors to that organization, which is about 72 of the 83 counties in the state of Michigan.
And those are funded or work, maybe is a better way to put it. They work in your individual county, so if you need some help, there should be somebody in your county you can go talk to?
Right. They do. Many of the counties actually raise the millage to pay for their Veteran Services Division. Some do not. Some fund it completely out of their general fund. But they are the first line for those people in those communities to receive benefits counseling from an accredited service officer.
So because you mentioned sort of the statistics a bit ago, Nick, is part of what the agency is now going to do is be sort of more statistics or data-driven on how the coalition works and operates and how the dollars come back into the state?
Well, we're working in coordination with them. We're trying to identify trends, trying to understand where veterans are underserved and identify what is causing those. Before we took over the grant process fully, the Michigan Veterans Coalition had about 3-4% of their claims were fully developed claims. And as we all know, that means they're going to the VA ready to be rated. And they also get a quicker turnaround. We're averaging about 128 days at the Detroit Regional Office. And they pay 1 year in the rear for the veteran from the date that they initiated their file. So that is great news for the veteran. But 3-4% was really low. It was one of the worst in the country. Right now we're sitting as a coalition, at about 52% of all claims that go to the VA are fully developed, ready to be rated. And we are just doing a phenomenal job as a coalition.
So Nick, you're recently separated from the service in 13. I'm sure on a briefing somewhere as you were exiting, they explained all these benefits to you, and you fully understood them and knew what to do when you got out, right?
Everybody thinks that's how it works. And
no, we don't. Dale's shaking his head. It hasn't changed in
45 years.
Yeah,
it's still the same.
Yeah.
Here's the game. What happens is, as you all know, when you're ready to go out, leave the military, you see that barn door, and you're just heading out.
Yep, that's what we're both shaking our heads at. No, this is how quickly do I get out?
Back out the other. So,
let me move to another area that you want to make sure we covered here before we hit to the bottom of the hour and lose you, which is you have some upcoming Veterans Expos you wanted to mention.
Right, yes. We have three Veterans Expos coming up in the next few months. We have one August 8th and 9th at the Superior Dome in Marquette, one September 5th and 6th at the Deltaplex in Grand Rapids, and one on November 7th and 8th at Cobo Center in Detroit. And what these veterans expos are, they're not just hiring fairs, but they also address healthcare issues, employment issues, education, all focusing on those different areas that we talked about earlier, the four areas that we focus on. And it wants to talk to the veteran as a whole, not as a just one seeking employment. Because you may have somebody that is in their late 50s, early 60s that want to talk about healthcare. They used to have a great healthcare coverage under GM, Ford, or Chrysler, and they have had that reduced. So now they're looking at VA healthcare. So we're trying to really look at the veteran as a total person and not just somebody looking for employment or just looking to go to college.
Well, that's certainly the way we look at them here on mm-hmm. Veterans Radio, so we're glad to hear the agency is focusing on that. The state has also passed a number of veteran supportive pieces of legislation in the last year or two. Any of those you want to highlight?
Yes, we've actually gotten some really great laws passed and regulations passed with the help of the Licensing and Regulation Agency, LARA. It's plumbers, electricians, that when they left service, that they had such a level of service that they can now transfer into the state of Michigan.
And I think, Nick, I want to make sure we get this out so that folks can figure out how to contact you or contact the agency on going forward basis. The laws have been adjusted to make reentry into Michigan a little easier, but how do folks find you and get to you if they want to learn more or get more information about these Veterans Expos?
The first site is MichiganVeterans.com. It has all of our areas of emphasis. And then the other way to get a hold of us and actually talk to somebody is call 1-800-MICHVET, M-I-C-H-V-E-T, and then they will be able to talk to a person in our call center, and they'll be able to connect you to where you need to go.
That's excellent, Nick. Thanks for joining us on Veterans Radio. There's a wealth of information out there, and we hope our listeners can contact you.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Navy Captain James Stockdale inflicted a near-fatal wound to himself to show his willingness to die rather than divulge information. Details after this.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife. My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
Stockdale was recognized by the North Vietnamese as the leader in the prisoners of war resistance to interrogation and in their refusal to participate in propaganda exploitation. Sensing the start of another purge and aware that his earlier efforts at self-disfiguration to dissuade his captors from exploiting him for propaganda purposes had resulted in cruel and agonizing punishment, Stockdale resolved to make himself a symbol of resistance regardless of personal sacrifice. He deliberately inflicted a near-mortal wound to his person in order to convince his captors of his willingness to give up his life rather than capitulate. He was subsequently discovered and revived by the North Vietnamese, who, convinced of his indomitable spirit, abated in their employment of excessive harassment and torture toward all of the prisoners of war. Upon release from the captivity, he was promoted to Rear Admiral. The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
Applebee's Restaurants is a proud sponsor of Veterans Radio. For the best in family dining, you'll want to make any Applebee's restaurant your destination for just plain good food, service, and a complimentary military discount. Make sure you ask for that when you get in there. Plan your next delicious out-to-dinner meal at Applebee's. That's Applebee's Restaurants. They help Veterans Radio deliver our program to you.
And welcome back to Veterans Radio. This is Jim Fossone, and with me in studio is Dale Thronberry. And we our next segment is on veterans treatment courts. We have two guests lined up for us. We have Judge Brian McKenzie and veteran James Edwards. Hello, gentlemen.
Whoa.
James, are you there? And we'll get Jim back on the line here shortly. Judge, we're glad to have you on Veterans Radio.
Well, it's nice for you to invite me.
Well, let me set this up a little bit for our audience. Judge McKenzie is a Michigan District Court judge out of Novi, Michigan. He's a proud Western Michigan University grad and Wayne State University Law School grad. He spent 5 years with the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office, 10 years as an assistant attorney general for the state of Michigan. But more importantly, I suppose, and now capping his career, he's at 26 years so far on the bench and up for re-election this year. And we'll do add a few more years on before he ages out here, Dale, on the bench. So this guy knows what he's talking about.
Well, thank you for saying that.
Judge, I think where we start with this is what are veteran treatment courts?
It's a specialized docket designed to take individuals who've served in the military, either any of the branches or National Guards if their service was overseas, and look at them in a little bit different way. There were studies of the returning Vietnam veterans that said if you took two individuals who were otherwise identical, one who'd served in the military and one who hadn't, the person who'd served in the military, on average, did 1 year longer in incarceration than the person who didn't. That strikes me as really unfair.
Dale, you want to comment about that?
No. I'll just keep my opinion to myself right now.
Well,
I knew it.
It's really true. I mean, we didn't look at what was happening with returning veterans who had combat experience, many of whom were coming back with post-traumatic stress or traumatic brain injury, which caused them to be more reactive, more resistant to authority, putting them in a courtroom setting when they're trying to self-medicate with alcohol or marijuana or some other drug, and being very resistant to the orders courts were giving them. The result was that judges tended to incarcerate them for longer periods of time than non-veterans. Well, we don't have to do that.
And this judge was recognized at a national level as a national problem,
yes.
If I understand it right.
Yes, and then back in 2009, a judge in New York named Russell looked at this and said, you know, this isn't all right, and started the first Veterans Treatment Court. We launched ours. We were one of the first in the country. We launched ours in 2010. And we've had more than 100 veterans go through the program now, and only 3 have been rearrested.
Wow, those are great stats.
They are. And what it means is that post-traumatic stress, in particular, is a curable disease. And we work very closely with the Veterans Administration, and they have some of the best experts in the world on combat-related post-traumatic stress. And we're able to get these veterans into the Veterans Administration, and we're able to get them the sort of treatment they need so that they don't end up in jail or prison. And the program itself is quite intense.
Judge, I want to talk about the program itself, but first I want to set up for our audience, which really listens to this program on the Internet all across the nation, that veteran treatment courts are nationwide. I think
they
I saw.
The first one, as I said, was in New York. The second one was in California, and I think the third was in Oklahoma. They're in every state now. They're not in every jurisdiction, unfortunately, but at least here in Michigan, if you're a veteran and you want to transfer into a veterans treatment court from a different court, you can do that.
So that's really a key part here in Michigan, is this idea that if I'm a veteran and I find myself in some trouble, and we'll talk about the types of issues and charges that can fit into the Veterans Treatment Court, even if the court I'm in maybe doesn't have it, I can ask to be moved to a veterans court. Is that the idea,
That's
Judge?
Correct. As long as the judge who you're appearing in front of agrees and the court that has a Veterans Treatment Court accepts you.
And are there,
we have not turned down anyone.
Does every county have a veterans court, or is it?
No. In 2010, there were none. And now there are, I think, 16. So veterans treatment courts are growing, but they're not in every county. There are veterans treatment courts in Wayne, Oakland, Macomb, and Washtenaw counties.
And Judge McKenzie, I believe you were one of the first to set this up.
That's
I think Judge David Jordan up in Ingham County was also sort of one of your early pioneers in this area.
Yes.
Are there any veteran treatment courts that have stopped operating because it hasn't? The judge has felt it hasn't worked out?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Great. So I believe we've got Jim Edwards back on the line. Jim, I want to say hello and let you say hello to the audience. I'll pull you into this in a minute, but I want to give you the opportunity to say hello to the Veterans Radio audience.
Yes, and I thank you for this opportunity, and I thank the entire audience for listening, too, because this is very important.
Judge, could you explain the types of issues or charges? Maybe you can make sure you put it in layman's language versus lawyer's language.
Sure.
That find their way into veterans treatment courts?
One of the big issues, of course, is drug-related activity. Possession of drugs, use of drugs, use of alcohol, drunk driving arrests, assault of crimes. In Michigan, you're eligible for veterans treatment court up through including a felonious assault charge. The vast majority of the people that are coming in, though, are coming in either for driving under the influence of something, possessing some drug, or some assaultive offense.
And can you walk us through a little bit about, okay, what's the process and why is this different? Why do veterans get special treatment here? And what is that special treatment, Judge?
Well, it's not actually special treatment. I think that's a misnomer. It's an acceptance of the special circumstance of the vet. And some understanding that these people have served their country, particularly the combat veterans, in very dangerous circumstances. And that as a result of that service, they've come back with invisible wounds. As I say, post-traumatic stress, traumatic brain injury, those sorts of events that they experienced when they were overseas caused an invisible wound, which caused them to try and either self-medicate with drugs or alcohol or to engage in activity that they probably wouldn't have but for the fact of their service. We're recognizing that circumstance, and we set this up with that recognition. Now, a veteran can, if a prosecutor's willing, get a diversionary status, and if they complete their probation, get their case dismissed. But that requires both the consent of the prosecutor and the judge.
There are some pretty tight schedules and
yes.
Oversight in a veterans treatment court, if I understand it correctly, Judge.
Maybe I'll walk you through it right from the beginning. First, we have to identify them. And it's sort of interesting because you have to ask the veterans in a number of ways if they've served, because some people think they're not eligible if they weren't combat veterans. Some people think they're not eligible if they weren't in the Army or the Marines. And it just goes through. And if they were in the National Guard and they went overseas, they don't think they were eligible. But all of those individuals under Michigan law are eligible. So we ask a number of times in a number of different ways to find out if we're dealing with a veteran. Then it's a voluntary program. You don't have to go into this program. You have to consent to it because it is a very intense program. And so if you don't consent, you get a normal probationary sentence. Now, truth is, most veterans do, but not all. Once you're in the program, and it's 18 months long, the first 9 months, you're going to see your probation officer to start with every week. You're going to be going to VA medical services if you're eligible, probably once or twice a week. You're going to be probably going to a 12-step program if you've got drugs or alcohol issues. You're going to be getting tested on a regular basis, as much as daily. You're going to see me on a regular basis. And at that point, after we've established that structure, we then begin the reward and sanction process. If you do well, there are rewards, such as we have a 501c3 that supports this program, and they get movie tickets and gasoline cards and that sort of thing. If you're doing well, we provide those to you. And if you're doing, if you make some mistakes, like if you use or if you fail to go to your counseling, you can be sanctioned. Anything from doing some community service up to including a short time in jail. After the 9 month, about 4.5 months in, if you're doing really well, we're going to step you down and you're going to start seeing your probation officer every other month. And after the 9 month period is up, if you've done well, then you're going to stop seeing me, but you'll continue slowly to go down to a regular probationary status, which ends after 18 months. Now, we go through a specific graduation ceremony for every person who enters into the program. We actually have a ceremony where they're given a challenge coin for their success, and it goes off in every November.
Well, I think that this is both intensive and structured, and I suspect that that's part of why it works so well with veterans. Jim Edwards, let me bring you in. First
sure.
off, I'd like the audience to know that you're a Vietnam vet,
yes.
and specifically thank you for your service there.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about how you bumped into being involved in the Veteran Treatment Court process.
Well, you know, I had a drinking and a drug problem for many years, and I just happened to get stopped for a DUI and ended up in Veterans Court. And one thing I can honestly say is that what I went through there became an accountability partner for me to bring me around. And as far as drinking and drugging, I had no more desire. And as a result also of this, I became a mentor for other veterans, and which I've really turned my life around because of this program.
Well, that's one of the things I wanted to bring up is the mentor program, which I think is a unique feature of veteran treatment courts. Jim, why don't you talk about what your role as a mentor is in this in the process, and Judge, maybe then you can jump in and tell us that role from the judicial point.
Okay, well, as a mentor, we meet with two different groups because they meet every twice a month. We meet with them, and we're there to mentor and see we're all on the same page because we've experienced being veterans, so we can talk the language. So as a result of that, it allows them to open up a lot easier to another veteran and try to bring things to the surface and hopefully to help them and to see as you being a testimony for them how you've come through a program and how it can help them also.
And from the court's perspective, Judge, what's the role of the veteran mentor in the process?
They provide a unique perspective, one that's not normally in a courtroom. If a person hasn't served, and I'm one of the people who hasn't, I can't understand what it's like. I can't particularly understand what it's like for a combat veteran because I didn't experience it. And people, it's been my experience, who have served find it's easier to talk to someone who has a shared experience. It may be true generally, but it's particularly true of veterans. And the mentors are there so that these individuals in the program can reach out to somebody if they're having some problems, and particularly someone like Jim who's been there, and they can give them answers to the questions that they have. They're there really as support and as a guide. And the mentors in the program do a wonderful job. They come to the court. They come to our sessions, which happen every other Monday. They're there all the time. They really are supportive of the guys in the program. And it is one of the unique things that was created when Veterans Treatment Courts got created. I know of nothing like it in the criminal justice system.
So how many mentors would you have in your court, for example, Judge?
We have about six. We have one female mentor and then about five or six male mentors. It shifts. Sometimes someone leaves, somebody comes in.
Sure.
And they're basically there because we have a program that can they can handle several individuals, and they do.
And Jim, when you graduated, I suppose, out of the Veterans Treatment Court and became a mentor, had you been involved in any veteran service organizations prior to that, or was this sort of
No, actually, I belonged to several, but I would never go to the meetings because of the post-traumatic stress disorder I was suffering. I couldn't socialize. I had it, and I found it very difficult. But through coming through the veterans program, I went to the VA hospital. I started meeting people that could help me with this post-traumatic stress disorder, and I basically, I guess you could say, I opened up, and I'm able to communicate with people now and socialize, and you know, it's really helped me with my being withdrawn as an individual.
The question I'm wondering about, Judge, is do you get support from other organizations? Do veteran courts have a direct interaction with veteran service organizations or the VA? Or
yes, the VA is a very strong partner of ours. We are able to they have veterans outreach liaisons who are present at every one of our sessions. Come equipped with a special computer connected into the VA so that they can provide information and assistance. And they're very strong advocates for getting people the services that they deserve. And you've noticed in the media recently there's been some challenges with regard to people getting registered and getting the services. Once they get in, the services are wonderful, but there's that gap. And it's not really there for Veterans Treatment Court. Once we contact the VA, they're very responsive to us, and we're able to get the veterans all sorts of treatment, and we're able to get their status changed. We've had people who were on 60% disability raised to 100% disability. Some people who weren't getting any disability are getting some now. Some people who they didn't think they were qualified for VA services, we were able to convince the VA that they were. In addition to that, we work very closely with Oakland County's Veterans Department. It's been a very strong advocate of ours. They are involved in helping us bridge those gaps and making sure that the veterans get the services that they earn through their service. We also are closely allied with two organizations that provide therapy dogs. There's a therapy dog that shows up at every Veterans Treatment Court session. It's a Doberman Pinscher. And at first I thought to myself, geez, are these guys going to take to a Doberman Pinscher as a therapy dog? But it's a military dog, and they did. And they're just wonderful, and there's two of them, and they come to every session. And they're there sort of to help the veterans in the wait time and to make sure that that passes with less nervous trouble so they don't get as anxious, and they do a wonderful job. And then we're also working with Stiggy's Dogs, who provides structure therapy and pet training for any veteran who's in the program. So if an individual is really suffering from post-traumatic stress and needs a structured dog, much like a leader dog, they'll provide one to that veteran for free.
Well, we had Stiggy's Dogs on. Jennifer was on a couple of weeks ago on Veterans Radio, where our audiences can listen to that program on the archives and the website. And we think they do great work, and we're glad to hear that they're involved with your court. And I did see on your website, Judge Brian McKenzie, McKenzie.com, JudgeBrianMcKenzie.com, that your therapy dog in session was a Doberman with the name of Rayland.
Yes, Rayland. And the other one's name is Spitfire.
These aren't pussycats.
Yeah. No, they're not. And but they're wonderful dogs, and they do amazing good work. And so do the people that have trained them and that bring them to the court. They're just really, they're volunteers. They're doing it because they care, as opposed to any sense of getting paid or anything. They don't. We don't even give them mileage.
Well, we do, we think the idea of a judge being able to call in, and I suspect the VA answers your phone calls from your office pretty promptly to help out the veterans that are in your court is a pretty good idea. Dale's here thinking he may want to figure out how to get in front of you in court.
No. I'm not going to figure out how to get in front of you in court.
It's not just me, in fairness. It's a team effort. I mean, yeah. My probation officer, Mike McGowan, who was a lieutenant in the Rangers, knows his way around military affairs and the system, and he just does very good work. Yeah. And then we have our defense advocate also does wonderful work. He goes over and above what you would expect. He's also named Mike, and he will do things at no charge for veterans who are in the program, and he's just an amazing advocate. Now, he was a Marine in Vietnam, and watching the two Mikes try and discuss military service, Marine versus Army, is sort of an amazing thing, because they don't seem to understand that they both didn't take showers together.
Right. Judge, I just had a quick question for you. How many veterans would you say that you see on a monthly basis?
Around 20.
About 20?
About 20. I'm going to see them once a month. I'm sorry. It's going to be more than that. It's going to be more like 30, because we have about 70 people in the program currently.
Oh, okay. That's good.
And Jim, from your experience, you want to pick a side on the Army versus Marine fight here? You want to give it?
Sure, why not? I'm a Marine, and very proud of it. And I'm just sorry for the other guys, you know. But, you know, we all understand, because we all take pokes at each other. We don't take it offensively. We just know that we're going to take pokes at each other, and That's the armed forces for you, you know. But we love each other.
That's very true.
Camaraderie there, you know.
Yeah. And we're all very proud of what we did.
And if I don't give a shout out for the Air Force when I get home, Brigadier General Carol Ann Fossone's going to read me the riot act. So.
And our female mentor is Navy, so you can't leave the Navy out. I figured that the reason that the Army and the Marines don't say as much negative about the Navy and the Air Force is because if you're in the Navy or the Air Force, more often than not, you get a shower.
There you go.
And better food.
Jim, one of the things I wanted you to maybe have the opportunity to reach out to our veteran audience, and what would you tell other veterans out there or loved ones of other veterans who may be listening to this and thinking about, hey, is this, you know, we all learned in the service not to volunteer, and or at least at our own peril. It sort of sounds like maybe one should volunteer to get moved over to the Veterans Court if one's available. What's your thought on that, Jim?
Well, yeah, if you're been caught like drinking, driving, whatever it is that you're caught, yes, they should move to the Veterans Court, because they're going to find help there. If they're going through just normal court and probation and things like that, that's all they're going to do is just go through a normal probation period. But with Veterans Court, they're going to find help. They're going to be guided to, like, VA hospital and whatever other organizations that will reach out and help them. They'll find that through the Veterans Court. And as a result of that, they will find themselves being a better person and functioning a whole lot better in society than what they were trying to hide and escape from society.
Mm-hmm. There's a couple of other reasons a veteran might want to come into Veterans Court beyond the help. In almost every county except for Oakland, the prosecutor is willing to, a person who goes into Veterans Treatment Court can get a diversion sentence, which means if they successfully complete the program, the charges against them will be dismissed. That requires, as I said, the consent of the prosecutor and the judge. And another advantage is if you're in on a second offense drunk driving and you enter a Veterans Treatment Court, you're eligible for a restricted license, which you cannot get in Michigan otherwise.
Well, those certainly are two good reasons to also be thinking about whether or not your situation warrants moving towards a Veterans Court. I did want to point out two interesting websites for folks who, the lawyers out there and the others who might be interested in this, justiceforvets.org and ncsc.org, which is the National Center for state courts has quite a wealth of information on veteran treatment courts around the country. It's not just a Michigan thing. I really appreciate Judge Brian McKenzie of the Novi District Court making himself available this afternoon. Judge, thank you very much. You're well-respected in the legal community. I'll give your website again, which is judgebrianmckenzie.com. And Jim Edwards, first, thank you for your service. Second, thanks for getting through this, and thanks for being on Veterans Radio.